Cashing Out on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This is Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Before I go any further, we're going to take a minute or two because this is Father's Day, and I think that all the dads out there do deserve a little bit of appreciation. I've got an amazing one. He's actually going to be retiring in 2 weeks. He's the reason why I'm here right now, because he sacrificed so much. Would wake up at 5 in the morning, and now he's going to be done with that in about 2 or so weeks. Would get home at 5:30, put in a lot of hard hours. I know that there are many of you guys out there that you put in hard hours for your children, your family. So this is just a little bit of a sign of appreciation to you guys, and you're going to get a great show tonight. So do want to start things off on that note, and boy, oh boy, we do have a lot of news to talk about, because we've got Shohei Ohtani, who's going to be on the mound on Monday. He makes his big return there. We saw the Rafael Devers news. We've got just a whole bunch to talk about on that front. We've got ourselves the College World Series. We've got the Stanley Cup Final. We've got ourselves the NBA Final. And we had Desmond Mayne get traded. I don't know where that's going to fit in the show, but somehow, some way, we're going to look to fit that in as well. So, man, it is a jam-packed, action-packed show. Oh, and we had the U.S. Open wrap up with J.J. Spahn getting the job done. Go San Diego State right there. So, man, do we have a lot of fun, and we've got ourselves a trio of great guests. We're going to be talking in about 15 minutes with Nick Whalen. You know him here at the network. He does a great job with the show prop points. On top of that, does a great job over at RotoWire. We're going to be chatting with him about what we're going to be seeing in NBA Finals game number 5. We'll probably fit in the Desmond Bane news a little bit with him as well, so that's going to be coming up in 15 minutes. Have to talk a little bit about the other form of baseball. I'm very much an MLB guy, but we do have ourselves the College World Series going down. Ben Wilson, he does a lot of play-by-play work with regards to the College World Series, does great work here at the network, and always like this, he's a great man from the great state of Wisconsin. Actually, both Nick Whalen and Ben Wilson are from the state of Wisconsin. I'm on the mic, I'm from the great state of Wisconsin, so you're getting a lot of cheesiness on the show tonight, and Ben, he's going to be joining me. We're going to be talking about the College World Series. We saw Coastal Carolina on Sunday get the job done. We'll see who's going to be able to on Monday, and then in a little bit over 2 hours, 1:15 a.m. Eastern Time, Pacific Time, that's going to be more around 10:15, Jonathan Davis, one of my favorites. He has joined me pretty much every single Saturday when I've been hosting this show, Cashing Out. He's joining me now on Sunday. We're going to be taking a look at Stanley Cup Final Game number 6. Is this going to be the game that ends it, or are we going to be getting those great words that we always love to hear in sports? Are we going to be getting a Game 7? So we're going to be breaking that down and so much more, and man, the biggest question mark with the show tonight is where to start, because, I mean, there's just so many things that are going down right now, and personally, I just think that we have to start with this Rafael Devers news. I talked about Scott Seidenberg back on the show that he was doing Live Bet Sunday, and always does a great job there, and I know that he was onto a little bit of something, and I'm onto a little bit of something as well, because something just reeks with this move of the Boston Red Sox. They trade away Rafael Devers, and in return, they get a haul that, I mean, even if you wanted to get rid of a guy, even if this is a little bit of a salary dump, this just doesn't make a lot of sense. You're going to be getting rid of a guy in Rafael Devers who helped the team get the job done today against the New York Yankees. He had a home run in a 2-0 game. He had really been coming on strong. I mean, it looked like for the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season that he was auditioning for the latest Bird Box movie, in the way that he had a blindfold on at the plate, was able to really get things all honed in, but we don't quite know what was happening behind the scenes. And for the San Francisco Giants, man, they clean house with this move. Yeah, get rid of Jordan Hicks, who Jordan Hicks hasn't been a good relief piece this year. He was a good starter all season long. Kyle Harrison, he was scratched from the start tonight for the San Francisco Giants, who, by the way, they still cover the run line. So, I mean, I've been talking about this Giants team all season long. Number one team in terms of bullpen ERA. That bullpen really stepped up in a big way, and Sean Hegele was able to give you a relatively good start. Hopefully I said that last name correct, but they give up those two guys, and then you give away a few prospects as well. I know that they've got a guy with the last name Abeo who's 20 years old. That's about all that I can tell you about them, but they did give away their first-round pick as well. James Tibbs, he was a first rounder out of Florida State in 2024. Promising guy, but again, you just need to, in my opinion, get a little bit more if you're the Boston Red Sox, and they trade him away here at June 15th. Trade deadline is well north of a month away, so they traded him well in advance. That tells me that there's probably a few things going on. For one, there was probably a little bit more tension than what was let on in regards to the media. We know what happened a few weeks ago with Rafael Devers saying, you know what, I refuse to play first base. I'd rather be back at third. Alex Bregman gets injured. He wasn't back at third. He was still DHing, and I think that he was probably a little bit salty about that. But for the Boston Red Sox, there has to be something else going on here. Like, there is no way that the Boston Red Sox are going to be punting on this season, especially after you sweep the New York Yankees. Completely different story if they go into Boston, they lose all three games. Then maybe you decide, hey, this is not going to be our season. The Toronto Blue Jays have been looking pretty rock solid, even though they lose their series to the Philadelphia Phillies. The Tampa Bay Rays, well, I mean, talk about the hot shell Rays. They were able to get the series win against the New York Mets, completely dominated them. And then, well, you've got the Baltimore Orioles being the Baltimore Orioles, playing a little bit better, but let's call it what it is. The Baltimore Orioles, they are not going to be competing for the postseason this year unless if something unforeseen happens. So you've got a Red Sox team that is now sitting above 500, and the question mark becomes, what is going to be the next move for the Boston Red Sox? And that's what we all don't know. I know that our good friend Scott Seidenberg was saying probably a first baseman, maybe a Rhys Hoskins, maybe you take a look at a Josh Naylor. Maybe you look elsewhere with regards to one of these just sliding teams in general. Like, I do think that for the Boston Red Sox, they're doing a solid job at the catcher spot, but I mean, maybe you go after a guy like Hunter Goodman, who's on a sinking ship of a Colorado Rockies team. Maybe you go after someone on like the Miami Marlins, something like that. But I mean, man, it's really fascinating as to what's going on. We need to dive in on this a little bit further, but first things first, I have to let you know that if you're looking to become a VSiN Pro subscriber, now is the perfect time to be able to do so, because as we know, football season is just around the corner, and our good friend here at the network, Josh Applebaum, he has done a great job with the Sharp Betting Playbook. That is a free pre-order that you're able to get with signing up for a VSiN Pro subscription, and it's a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smart NFL bets. Sign up now and you get instant access to a daily best bet email with all of our VSiN show hosts and guests and all their plays for the day, real betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 2025-26 NFL betting guide. That's going to be dropping in about 2 weeks on July 1st, so you don't want to miss out on that. Typically, we charge about $20 a month. We're going to save you $41 off that price, and we're going to get you guys that sharp betting playbook by going to vsin.com/subscribe and utilizing the promo code of BOOK. B-O-O-K, that is VSIN.com/subscribe, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. And now it's all just about what do the Boston Red Sox do best, do next, because, man, that is right now the big question with the Red Sox. They have been bringing up these young guys, and let's call it what it is. When you're a young guy in Major League Baseball, like we've seen Roman Anthony be able to come up, all these young guns, and they've got some potential with them. Like, Sadane Rafaela took a little bit of time in his rookie season last year. He seems to be given a little bit more for this team. They were bullish on Tristan Casas, and Tristan Casas is out for the season. That's much of why our good friend in Scott Seidenberg was thinking that perhaps they trade for a first baseman on like an expiring contract. Maybe he's got 1 or 2 years remaining. As we know, Christian Campbell has been a little bit up and down. That's going to be a really interesting case study, and I think that that's a big TBD. And I do think that the Red Sox are not done. I do think that there is going to be another move. Just the matter of what is a big giant question, and something that we have not talked about. How about the San Francisco Giants? Like, I mean, we're talking about the Boston Red Sox and how this is such a befuddling move. This makes all the sense in the world for the San Francisco Giants. Heck, they very nearly got the job done tonight against the LA Dodgers. They cover the run line in this game. And for the San Francisco Giants, this is a big time move. Like, I was on this show 2 weeks ago, maybe a tad bit more, maybe a tad bit less, talking about, hey, San Francisco Giants, 15-1 to win the NL West. Maybe it's not something that is hitting like 50% of the time or anything like that, but if you're giving me a 15-1 shot on them to be able to win the NL West, I'm going to be willing to take that, because I've talked about it all season long with the San Francisco Giants team. The one thing that they've got above every other team in baseball right now, bullpen pitching. Number one in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Heck, we saw that on display tonight. You had pretty much a full-on bullpen game that was, I mean, talk about as impromptu as it gets. Kyle Harrison gets scratched about 15 minutes before the start of that game, and yet they still are out there. They're still able to cover the run line. They give you a relatively good effort, and what this team was really lacking was a little bit of hitting. Like, I will say this as well. If you're the Boston Red Sox, how do you not trade for Mikey Strzemski? Like, how do you not decide, hey, we're going to make this really, really unpopular move right here. Let's at the very least get Yastrzemski, because that's going to get butts in seats and that's going to get the people going. Like we always heard from the old, if you've ever seen the movie Blades of Glory, by the way, very good one. You always have to get the people going. That Mike Yastrzemski move probably would have been able to get the people going. They decided not to do that. So, I mean, shame on them. And if you're looking now at the odds board with the San Francisco Giants, when I was talking about them having value to win the NL West, they were at 15-1. They're now at 7-1, and I still think that's relatively good value. Like, I recognize that the LA Dodgers are going to be making moves. They should at some point be getting Blake Snell back in the fold. They've had a banged-up bullpen, Blake Tryon being on the injured list, not having Bruce Arterguy at all, guys like that, but I mean, for the San Francisco Giants, I really do think that there's value with this team. Jungle Lee has been rock solid for you all season long. William Adames is finally hitting. And that was one of the biggest wastes of money up until about a week or so ago for the San Francisco Giants. 3 home runs in the last 7 days, so he's starting to find it a little bit more. You knew that he would at some point. I knew that because I'm a Milwaukee Brewers fan personally, that he probably wasn't going to ever live up to that contract. I thought it was a little bit of an overpay, but now you're finally starting to get a little bit more of fair value out of that. But for this San Francisco Giants team, having the starting rotation that you do, Landon Roop, I believe, is rock solid. Logan Webb has been able to do a really good job for this team. You know what you're getting out of Hayden Birdsong, who's come out of the bullpen. He's been able to do a rock solid job as well. I do believe that there's a little bit of value on them. And Padres, you know that they're going to make a move. They've been pretty pedestrian at the plate all season long. So I do like this move for the San Francisco Giants, and I love this move on the show. Coming up next with Nick Whalen. He does great work here at the network with the show Prop Points. He's going to be joining me. We're going to be talking about Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and we'll see if we can fit in there the Desmond Bane conversation as well. That's up next on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Great to be joined by this man on the Progressive Guest Line as we've got Nick Whalen aboard. He does such great work here at the network on the show Prop Points. You're able to find that Monday through Friday during the afternoon. Additionally, he's doing such great work over at RotoWire, and Nick is also a man from the great state of Wisconsin, much like myself. And Nick, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, Greg, good to be back, man. Good to be working with you again. Beautiful weather this weekend in Wisconsin. You know, we were just talking off air, but we're getting to that danger zone for NBA guys like you and myself, where we're almost out of games. We might only have 2 left in the NBA season, but look, we got big trades going on right now. We got a game to preview coming up tomorrow night. Glad to be back.
Absolutely, and we'll dive into the Desmond Bane chatter a little bit later on, but first things first, we do have the task at hand of Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and always want the focus to be on the games themselves. And right now for the Indiana Pacers, in a lot of places you're going to be finding them as an underdog of between 9 to 9.5 points. Totals fluctuated, but it was at a 223 when I was doing the show yesterday. Now we're finding it at a 224. How do you take a look at this game where I feel like with the OKC Thunder, the biggest question is, what sort of adjustments do they make? Because I feel like throughout the series, they've almost over-adjusted and almost outsmarted themselves.
I think there's a case to be made that that's exactly what's going on, right? I don't think, you know, if you would have told me coming into this series that if one team, you know, had made 2 lineup changes already in this series, that it would be the Oklahoma City Thunder, right? We talked about that heading into game one. You know, was that some sort of psychological advantage for the Indiana Pacers, kind of feeling like OKC was the first team to crack? They're adjusting before the series even starts. I don't know how much that had to do with it, but I think it tells you that, you know, Mark Daigneault and his staff, you know, recognize that there are some things that they're worried about in this series. And, you know, we're 4 games in, we're heading into game 5 tomorrow night, and OKC is clearly still tinkering. You know, do they go with the double big lineup? Do they go a little bit smaller? We're seeing, you know, more and more of Alex Caruso throughout this series, even though he's not starting. And you know, you mentioned the line for game 5. It's interesting how much variance we've had game to game, right? I mean, this one more closely aligns with what we had in game 1. I think that closed 9.5 or 10, depending on where you got it. We're up to 11.5 in favor of OKC. In game 2, number falls all the way down to 5.5 for game 3. And it does feel like, you know, with Oklahoma City winning game 4, a game which I did not necessarily think they were going to win, Greg. I mean, there was a time in that third quarter where Indy pushed the lead up to 10. OKC can't hit a shot. You know, they had, I think, 3 turnovers on 4 possessions at one point. And really, for the first time, I thought, I think OKC might lose the finals. I can't believe this is going to happen. I think the Indiana Pacers are going to go up 3-1 and close this thing out. But it does feel like with OKC rallying back, taking game four, even though this series is 2-2, you know, you look at the series price right now, OKC was minus 500 24 hours ago. It's still minus 450 at the DK Sportsbook. So the sentiment, at least, has shifted back toward, okay, the Thunder, they're going to survive this. They're back in control. They have home court advantage. I still don't know that I would touch them at 9.5. I mean, this has been a really, really evenly played series to me for the most part. And you know, you talk about adjustments game to game. OKC's got to figure something out in terms of the three-point shooting. 3 of 17 from beyond the arc in game four. I mean, this is a team that's shooting just 34% from three in the playoffs. They're somehow at 36% for the series, but they're only taking 26 threes per game. That's about 10 fewer than they were in the first three rounds of the playoffs. They took 38 per game in the regular season. OKC has to find a way to generate open threes.
Yep, I do agree with you there for the OKC Thunder. It's been a little bit interesting to look on that front as well in terms of the outside shooting. And I think that this is an interesting point to take a look at as well, because I, throughout the NBA playoffs, I've just been live betting all these games because for myself, I just take a look at things. And with the way that the Indiana Pacers just seem to always rally back, we saw it on the flip side with the OKC Thunder in the last game, being able to come back. Yeah. They had that 31-17 fourth quarter. How much do you think that there's more value in just in-game betting this rather than take a look at things before the game? Because I just feel like the team is down. Yeah. It sounds like a really simple handicap, but you take the team that's down double figures to be able to make a comeback. And if you've done that just throughout the postseason, I'm sure you've made a killing.
Absolutely, especially if you've done that, you know, and jumped on at the right times with the Indiana Pacers, right? I mean, OKC has not been in quite as many of those situations where they've had to rally back. And it was, you know, it was interesting to see the script flipped on them, right? I mean, usually they're the team that is making the 10-point comeback in the fourth quarter. And obviously they were on the other end of that in game four. But overall, I think you're right. Yeah, I would kind of stay away from this pre-flop, see how the game goes, you know, especially if you're a seasoned NBA bettor, if you're watching these games and you tend to have a sense for how things are flowing. And I think there is more opportunity right now in terms of the in-game wagering.
No question about it. It's Nick Whalen, who does such great work here at our show, Prop Points. He's joining me right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And as we know, the NBA Finals are going down right now. We're talking about that right now with Nick, along with the Stanley Cup Final. And PropheDex, they're offering the best odds all playoffs long. PropheDex is a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40-plus states, first of its kind in the United States, where you're able to make sports picks against other groups of fans rather than sports books, and that gives you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. You can even request your own odds. Download PropheDex today. Utilize that promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. That'll earn you up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. And Nick, I know you do the show, the prop points, so how about if we do dive in on a few props? And one player that I've been really intrigued by here in the postseason has been Ben Mathurin, because I have been playing for essentially, lack of a better term, we talk about zigzag theory in terms of sides and totals in the NBA playoffs. I've been doing the zigzag Ben Mathurin theory, where if he goes over the next game, you go under the next. If he went under in the previous game, he goes over in the next. How are you playing Ben Mathurin, and what are you taking a look at with him with regards to game five?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a good place to start. You know, there are some role player props that I actually like for Game 5. And Mathurin, you know, just looking at the points, is one that I was considering. 8.5 right now is the number over at the DK Sportsbook, minus 120 to the over. I don't know how much I subscribe necessarily to the zigzag theory. You know, for as well as Mathurin played specifically in Games 2 and 3 in this series, like, he still doesn't seem to have the full trust of Rick Carlisle. Like, only 14 minutes for Mathurin coming off of that huge game in game three. Like, they do kind of tend to feel it out with him a little bit more. But look, we could talk about OKC's offensive struggles. The Pacers offense also essentially shut down midway through the third quarter and all the way into the fourth. I think the shot creation, the lack of a conscience that Ben Mathurin brings to this team, I think they need a little bit more of that, because as great as Tyrese Haliburton is, he's not necessarily a guy who creates open looks for himself. You know, Siakam, yeah, he can get to the rim, but I think OKC's done a pretty good job of limiting him, frustrating him throughout this series. You know, Nemhard, not necessarily a guy that you want breaking guys down one-on-one. You can say the same thing about Aaron Nesmith. So I think we should see more Ben Mathurin in game five. It's really a question of, you know, is this one of those nights where he has the trust of Rick Carlisle? But look, I think if you're looking at that points prop specifically, Greg, the thing that that really attracts me to Ben Mathurin is he's continuing to get to the free throw line. Like, even if he's not shooting it all that well, you know, he's averaging what, seven free throw attempts, I should say, per game in this series. Got to the line eight times, even in game four in limited action. Missed three of those, of course, would have gone over his points prop had he made those. But that's been there, you know, really whenever the minutes come for Ben Mathurin, he gives you a nice floor just getting to the free throw line. At that point, you know, if you say, all right, he gives you three, four, five free throws, we're really only talking about two made field goals on top of that to hit that over 8.5. So that is certainly one that I would look at for game five.
Yep, that is very much an interesting one. And this one obviously is one that a lot of people are starring because for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 34-plus points in all but one game here in the series. His point prop is now at 35, which for most guys is absolutely ridiculous. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been just that good here in the postseason. And how would you be taking a look at his right now? Do you think that there might be a little bit of regression, or do you just keep riding it until the wheels fall off?
I think it's the latter, man. I think it's the latter. I think you just keep riding it. I mean, it's insane to look at that number, right? And see 34.5 up there right now at DraftKings. But all this guy does is essentially give you somewhere between like 28 and 37 points. It feels like every single night, you know, he had the 40-point game, of course, in the Minnesota series, 34, 38, 34, 24, 35 over his last five games. And you know, it's not necessarily a fun bet because it always seems to come down to the final minutes in the fourth quarter. It's one that you kind of have to sweat out. But you know, we saw SGA struggle, I thought, especially early on in game four. Only had 2 points, I believe, in the first quarter at 15 in the fourth. It's one of those props that even if it doesn't go well early on, like you're never going to count yourself out. You know, even if he has 10 points at the half, you're still going to feel good about SGA, you know, erupting at some point. So look, I'm not going to sit here and tell anybody not to bet this because chances are Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to have a big game for OKC to end up taking a 3-2 advantage in this series. And I think he will. I think he will at home. You know, Andrew Nembhard has done a fantastic job, I think, one-on-one defending him throughout this series. I think he's frustrated SGA to a level that we haven't really seen from any of their other postseason opponents. But I think the Thunder are going to continue to tweak. They're going to continue to adjust. You have multiple days between games to figure things out. I think we see a more consistent effort throughout four quarters from SGA tomorrow night.
Yep, with SGA, he just has been able to time and time again be able to get the job done. And we got about 30 seconds left here. Anything else that you're going to be taking a look at in passing?
Yeah, I'll give out a few more props real quickly. You know, we talked about OKC needing some more threes. I think Isaiah Joe might be that guy. Maybe we see a little more minutes out of him. You know, he's been pretty stingy as far as the leash that Mark Daigneault has given him so far. But Isaiah Joe to hit 1 3-pointer is plus 105. I like that. Looking at Alex Caruso, over 3.5 rebounds. And then on the Indiana side of things, Aaron Nesmith over 1.5 threes. Would take that up to 2.5 if you don't want to eat all that juice.
Absolutely. Nesmith has been getting the job done all throughout the postseason, just like our good friend Nick Whalen gets the job done time and time again. And coming up next, we go from looking at live game action to what we saw with Desmond Bane and where Kevin Durant might be landing. That's up next right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Great to be rejoined by this man as we've got Nick Whalen aboard. Does great work here at the network with the show Points Props, or Point Props. He's doing a tremendous job there. Additionally, you're able to catch him on RotoWire as well. And Nick, how about if we dive in on what we've seen here in the last 24 hours with regards to things off the court in the NBA? And we will dive in on Kevin Durant in a minute. But I mean, Desmond Bane goes for four first-round picks. And I like Desmond Bane. Desmond Bane was rock solid over at TCU back in the day. He's been a nice three-point shooter in this league. Guy that you know is going to be able to give you some buckets. But how do you view this from the Orlando Magic side of things? Mm-hmm. And do you think that they are a team that can ascend in an Eastern Conference where, let's call it what it is, the Indiana Pacers were a little bit of a surprise this year? And I do think that the creme de la creme out there is the Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, a lot to unpack here, a lot, right? I mean, this came out of nowhere. And then, of course, we get the Devers trade later in the day. So we had a completely out of nowhere trade in baseball, completely out of nowhere trade in the NBA. And, you know, you mentioned the package, right? So three first round picks and a swap. And interesting, by the way, that one of those picks could be next year's 2026 Phoenix Suns pick. There are a bunch of permutations there. There are other teams involved that we don't have time to dig in on. But interesting to me, nonetheless, that the Magic were willing to part ways with that pick, which could be very valuable. They also give up KCP. They also give up Cole Anthony. had to do that for salary matching reasons. You know, if anything, I think the KCP contract just kind of felt like a failure. So, you know, being able to offload that maybe was part of the thinking here for Orlando. But overall, Greg, I see this as the Magic pushing the chips in. And like you said, recognizing that maybe there is opportunity in the Eastern Conference right now, specifically next season. And, you know, I think teams are watching how the Indiana Pacers built this team. They're watching the run that they're on and thinking, are we really that far away from building our own version of the Indiana Pacers? So I think there are a lot of reasons that pushed Orlando toward making this deal. And, you know, right away, of course, you're thinking, wow, that is probably an overpay for a guy in Desmond Bane who, you know, maybe in the Eastern Conference would be like the last all-star in, but in the West is not an all-star. But I think there's this idea that unless you're, you know, signing or trading for one of the 10 best players in the NBA, one of those guys who it feels like just locks you into 50 wins and all of a sudden you're contending for a title, that if you don't do that, you know, it doesn't really matter. But I think in this new, you know, CBA environment, like these are the ways, these are the type of moves that you have to be willing to kind of jump into to build a team. It's really, really difficult to go out and just, you know, acquire one of those big time difference making players. For one, they're not available all that often. Secondly, you're in Orlando, which is a fine city, but not necessarily, you know, a team or in a franchise that's on the top of the list for, you know, guys when they hit free agency. So I think the Magic saw an opportunity to add a guy who, at least on paper to me, is a perfect fit. You know, he gives them exactly what they need. He kind of fits already what the identity of this team came to be last season. He's a dog on defense. Like you said, he can shoot the three, shot 41% from deep this past season. The Magic were dead last in the NBA by a mile this past year in three-point shooting, shot just under 32% as a team. They were in the bottom five in terms of volume. So I think they identified, you know, a player in Bane who, by the way, is under contract through 28, 29. You don't have to worry about that situation down the road. They identified a guy who was available, somebody who I think fits their culture, and somebody who, you know, fills some of the gaps that were glaringly clear, I thought, for this team by the end of the season. And, you know, right after this trade broke, Greg, I went right to the sports book. I said, all right, where are the Magic coming in to win the East next season? Orlando now 8-1 to win the Eastern Conference. They are still behind the Knicks, the Pacers, the Cavs, and the Celtics, but I feel a lot better about this roster now than I did earlier this morning before this broke. The one thing they do need to do, though, is they need to add some depth, right? This is still a team that I think has issues at point guard. Obviously, you get Jalen Suggs back, and that's big, but, you know, kind of a shaky three-point shooter in his own right. They're going to have to do some shopping in free agency, and they're going to have to hope that Anthony Black, I think, takes a big step forward in year three.
And I think that's interesting. Take a look at the flip side for the Memphis Grizzlies. They're now 60-1 to win the Western Conference. And this was a team just a few years ago that we thought that they were on the doorstep of perhaps being that next team to be able to break through. How do you take a look at the Grizzlies moving forward? Because that's something that not a lot of people are talking about. And it just feels like everything is falling apart with not knowing what you're going to get out of Ja Morant on or off the court.
Yeah, no question. I mean, like you said, not long ago, I think this is one of those rosters that would have been on the short list of, okay, if you could, you know, if you could take over as the GM of any team, you know, what's the best situation? And, you know, I think as recently as a year or two ago, Memphis would have been near the top of that list. They were second in the Western Conference a few months ago, right? I mean, this kind of late season collapse all happened so quickly. You have a new head coach in the mix. The Western Conference, you know, is the opposite of the East right now. We're talking about Orlando maybe sensing an opportunity to ascend. With Boston, you know, likely taking a step back. The Cavs have question marks. You know, I think obviously everybody respects this Pacers team, but you don't look at the Pacers as some sort of immovable obstacle in the Eastern Conference. Whereas in the West, we have the opposite situation. We got, you know, 13, 14 teams right now that probably feel like they want to attempt to make the playoffs or feel like they can contend next season. And I think if Memphis looked around, assessed the roster and said, look, we're just not going to have that great of a chance. You know, we're looking at another play-in type of season. And, you know, this is a way to hit some sort of a soft reset button. I actually applaud the Memphis Grizzlies for being realistic, because I don't necessarily think a lot of teams operate that way. You know, you look at the return here, obviously the draft capital is the headliner, but the Grizzlies do have a history, Greg, I think, of maximizing role players. So, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, these guys could contribute. You know, this is already a really deep team. And again, the Grizzlies tend to get the most out of guys like that. But at the end of the day, I think it just begs the question, like, are there more moves coming, right? I mean, like you said, Ja Morant, you could pencil him in for 20 to 25 missed games, if not more, until proven otherwise. You know, Jaren Jackson Jr., really nice player. Thought he was really disappointing to end the season. You know, somebody who's due a near-max contract in the very near future. Your lottery pick this past year, Zach Edey, just had surgery. He might miss the start of the season. a lot of questions right now for the Memphis Grizzlies. And I think there will be other teams certainly calling the Grizzlies in the coming weeks.
No question about it. I think that this is the first of a few moves for the Memphis Grizzlies, as Nick Whalen does great work here at the network on prop points. You're able to catch that 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday, right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And now we have to talk about this man, Kevin Durant, because he's been traded a few times in the last few years, and the teams that have acquired him, well, hasn't necessarily panned out for them. How do you take a look at his prospects with him very much looking at the Miami Heat right now? There are a few other suitors out there as well. Certainly the Heat have been the one that have been standing out to me the most, but I mean, there's a lot of question marks with a man that is going to be 37 years old, and let's call it what it is. He's had a little bit of a tough time staying out there on the court in the last few years as well.
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. And, you know, I think what LeBron is doing right now in Los Angeles, you know, has kind of reset the way that we think about these aging superstars. And obviously Durant, you know, has been close to that same level as he gets into his late 30s. But I think the big question here is like, well, how big of a return does a soon to be 37-year-old Kevin Durant on an expiring contract command, right? You know, when we're talking about the package for Desmond Bane, I don't think we're going to see something like that necessarily for KD, just because of the situation with his age, with his contract, with how difficult it is to bring in, you know, that kind of money on any roster. Yeah, we did get the news over the weekend, of course, that Kevin Durant, you know, wants to go to Miami, San Antonio, or Houston. At least those are the teams that he would sign up, you know, to commit to long term. That doesn't necessarily mean that those are the only three teams that will be in on the bidding, but I think we have to look at, you know, what do the Suns want back in this deal? I think they want players on controllable contracts. I think they want guys who are somewhat win now players. Like, obviously you'll take a young talent, you'll take a package of picks, but this is a team that does not control its own draft capital until the next decade. And, you know, they're kind of in a similar situation to what we've talked about with our Milwaukee Bucks here in Wisconsin, Greg, that if you don't control your own draft capital, you know, bringing in picks, bringing in young players, that's all well and good. But what you don't want to do is bottom out and give the number one or number two overall pick to another franchise. So we have a really unique situation here. And, you know, of those three teams that Durant named, I think Houston makes the most sense to me on paper. You know, you could sell Phoenix on the upside of Jalen Green. You could probably even get that deal done without him. You know, the Rockets actually own some of the Suns' future draft capital. So we could see a redux of what Brooklyn did, you know, with Houston last year, where you're basically sending back picks that were previously traded. I think that's going to be a priority for Phoenix. And Houston, of course, has as many young players as just about anybody that you could put on the table in that deal. San Antonio, fascinating for obvious reasons. The idea of, you know, pairing Kevin Durant with Victor Wembanyama, you got De'Aaron Fox on that roster. That's really intriguing. Miami's always going to be in these talks because it's Miami and they always throw their hat in the ring. I'm not really sure what that package would look like. You would think it would have to be heavily picks based. You probably have to rope in a third team. You know, Andrew Wiggins contract, Jaime Jaquez, Khalil Ware, Davion Mitchell. I don't know that those pieces are enough necessarily to entice the Phoenix Suns. Although what we do know for Phoenix is that Durant will be traded, right? There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of pushback there.
Yep, exactly. And how about, we've got about a minute remaining. Where do the Suns go from here? Because right now they've got the worst contract in all basketball with Bradley Beal, and that's right now just killing them.
That was the cardinal sin, right? It wasn't bringing in Kevin Durant. It wasn't, you know, some of the draft pick and role player mistakes that they made. It was bringing in Bradley Beal on that no trade clause, right? When you trade for a player with a no trade clause, the no trade clause does not go away. And now they are stuck with the most difficult contract to move in the NBA. So I think we're in a waiting period here for the Phoenix Suns. You're not getting anybody in the Durant deal that's going to give you a 45 win floor. You know, I think this is a team that, again, in a really, really competitive Western Conference, we could see this team finish 13th, 14th. I mean, they'll be in that bottom three, I think, in the West next year. Devin Booker's a really nice player. He's not on the short list, Greg, of those guys who, if he's on your roster, he locks you into 50 wins and he locks you into a playoff spot. I mean, we saw it last year. Booker and Durant were mostly healthy. This team missed the postseason. They're going to be significantly worse next season.
I totally agree with you. Nick does great work at the network. Great to get him aboard. And coming next, Shohei Ohtani starting on Monday. We need to talk about that on Cashing Out on Beast, the Sports Betting Network.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out. I'm VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It was great to be joined by Nick Whalen in the last two segments, breaking down the NBA Finals, game number 5, what we're going to be getting on that front, and additionally, what is starting to be a wild, wild offseason in the NBA. And with the NBA, you always know that you're going to get intrigue off the court. Like, look no further than what we saw a few months ago with Luka Doncic getting traded. We just see Desmond Bane get traded for four first round picks. Just absolutely wild what we're seeing out there, and it should be a tremendous summer of action. So big thanks to Nick for joining me in the last segment. Now let's take a look at what we're actually going to be getting out there on the field and on the diamond, as we saw some big time news late on Sunday after the Dodgers got the win by a count of 5-4 against the San Francisco Giants, where the Giants, they made an acquisition as they are bringing in Rafael Devers, and we'll certainly be looking at the Red Sox and their first game without Rafael Devers to start out our number two. But that said, now for the LA Dodgers, they get an acquisition that was already on their own roster. Shohei Ohtani going to be making his pitching debut for the LA Dodgers. They announced this after the game on Sunday, and you've heard Dave Roberts saying, oh, Shohei Ohtani is going to be pitching sometime this week. I think that he said, I might have misheard this, that I thought that they were going to try to give him one or two more simulated games as well, but here we go. Shohei Ohtani, he is going to be on the mound against the old Slam Diego Padres, and the line is right now in the neighborhood about minus 140, minus 157 is a high watermark on the LA Dodgers, and we're between plus 125 to plus 135, that number on the San Diego Padres. Right now we're seeing a total of between 8.5 and 9, and there are many books that haven't necessarily deviated too much off of their initial openers. I think that there are some books that are a little bit in shock right now as to what you're going to get out of Shohei Ohtani. But here's the interesting handicap here. What in the heck are we going to get out of Shohei Ohtani? Because that's really the question. All reports are he's going to throw 1 to 2 innings. That would indicate that he's a glorified opener. That seems about right, because with Shohei Ohtani, the situation is so unique. Typically, when you have a guy that is making his first pitching start of the season and he didn't start out the year on the big league roster, you have some minor league rehab starts to go with. If you're looking at things at the beginning part of the season, you're able to go off of spring training numbers. With Shohei Ohtani, he's throwing simulated games, and they're really not giving you as much score or anything like that with regards to simulated games. There are going to be some reporters roaming around being like, oh, he threw this many pitches and things like that. But with a simulated game, you don't have an ERA or anything like that, where even if you just go down to like AAA Oklahoma City, that's their affiliate for the LA Dodgers, at the very least, you went 3 innings, you gave up 2 runs. Guess why you can't send Shohei Ohtani down to the minor league level? Because you need his bat in the lineup. That would not be good for the LA Dodgers being like, oh, we're going to give you a minor league rehab start. Have fun in Oklahoma City this week. Oh, wait a second. We need our leadoff hitter who's hitting for north of 20 home runs and is right now leading the league in terms of MVP odds. So that's the unique situation here with the Dodgers. What we do know is that the Dodgers have been dealing with a lot of bullpen issues all season long. They just got Kirby Yates off the injured list. They just got Blake Treinen, or they are still dealing with Blake Treinen being off the injured list. Kirby Yates, he along with Michael Kopech are the guys that are coming off the injured list. Bruce Arter Gratterall has been injured all season long. You've had injury upon injury, and bullpen injuries are manifested by the fact that you've got other injuries with regards to starting rotation. Roky Sasaki is not throwing, and there's no idea when he's going to be able to throw for the LA Dodgers. That's an issue. Blake Snell has been out since the beginning part of the season. That's an issue. You go down the list, and the LA Dodgers, I don't know why this is. And someone, I hope, can do a little bit of research study or something like this. They just seem to get more pitchers hurt than any other team in baseball. Maybe it's just me, and maybe it's just what I'm noticing, but it does feel like with the LA Dodgers, they just have the propensity to have everyone in that starting rotation, bullpen, what have you, get injured. Maybe it's something to do with just training, the regimen. I don't know what it is, but there's just always some of those teams in sports where it's like, wow, all their guys get injured every single year. And I look at you, the Minnesota Twins, with regards to position players, Byron Buxton and Royce Lewis. Those guys need to be wrapped up in bubble wrap. But I do think that it is so interesting to look at this game, because even though Shohei Ohtani is only going to go an inning or two, what it does provide the Dodgers is bullpen relief. And you don't need to make a move to be able to acquire Shohei Ohtani. That's the real value of him, because you're able to keep your 25-man rotation, and you're able to give Shohei Ohtani innings now. So that helps out your bullpen. That gives you a little bit more depth. That is massive for the team, and hopefully no longer you're going to have Kike Hernandez giving up grand slams in the ninth inning like we saw over the weekend as well. But for the LA Dodgers. They are a team that I'm going to be willing to take a stab on here right now, seeing that number, like I said, in the mid-140s, as high as about a minus 156. And I certainly do think that this team is going to be coming in. There's no question about it. I do think that there's going to be a lot of people as they see Shohei Ohtani is making the start, and they are going to be willing to bet on that. Now, what we're going to be able to get in the prop market, that really is a question, and that's something that we do want to be diving in on, as this is Cashing Out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and we'll certainly dive in on that. But something else that you want to dive in on, as well, as to play Circa Survivor or the Circa Millions contest. I know that you want to do so. Football, it is around the corner. And how would you like to do so for free this season? Winner Circle Proxy is giving away one free $1,000 entry to each contest plus full proxy service. And to get on this, you'll be paired with a VSiN host for strategy all season long. Enter now for your chance to win. Just visit winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. That is winnerscircleproxy.com/VSIN. And right now, with regards to a lot of books, they just don't have a lot of player props up. You're going to find this with a lot of sports books. It takes them till really the early AM to get a lot of these strikeout props up, a lot of these just general props in general. So right now, we are in a little bit of wait-and-see mode with regards to a lot of these. Right now, in terms of Shohei Ohtani, the one place where I'm seeing it is at DraftKings. You're able to go over 3.5 strikeouts, and you're getting a pretty penny on it, plus 295. You're, for one, going to need to bank on the high side that he's going to be going two innings. And again, you just don't know what you're going to be able to get out of him. And with regards to this player prop, I do think that that's interesting to be able to go 3+. But I mean, more or less, you're seeing also a 1.5 at a minus 110. I actually would be willing to go over, because for Shohei Ohtani, if he only throws one inning, he gets two strikeouts. That cashes it for you right there. I do think that that would be a little bit of value. Now, you don't have outs recorded, because that would be pretty much a roll of the dice. Do you think that he's going to go one inning, or do you think that he's going to go two innings? And you're pretty much picking something out of a hat. But I do think that even if you go on the low end for Shohei Ohtani with one inning, I do think that he can get multiple strikeouts. Now, he does have to go up against a guy in Luis Arias, who he doesn't strike out a lot at the top of the lineup for the San Diego Padres. But let's say that he gives up a single there, you still have the propensity to be able to get three strikeouts in that inning. And if you get the second inning, like you're talking about the low end being one inning, the high end being two innings, if he goes two innings, that's a strikeout in an inning. So I actually would be looking a little bit more there. I don't mess around as much with regards to player props, but I do think that that could be relatively intriguing. And then you do take a look at the flip side of this game, because there's another team on the flip side in the San Diego Padres that they're actually having a halfway decent season, 39-31. They're looking to be able to make a push at the playoffs. They got the job done on Sunday against the Arizona Diamondbacks, and Dylan Cease, I do think, is doing for a lot of positivity. And that's a big reason why we're seeing this total between 8.5 and 9. That's a big reason why I'm looking at the under. With Dylan Cease, a 4.28 ERA, but he's been able to give you a 3.10 fielding independent. The guy has been continuing to get strikeouts, 11 punchouts per 9 innings. He has been giving up a little bit over 3 walks per 9 innings, which for his standards, it's not too bad. He's only giving up 1 home run per 9 innings, and he just faced off against his LA Dodgers lineup a few days ago, albeit it was in San Diego, and San Diego, as we know, one of the more pitcher-friendly ballparks out there in baseball. But 7 shutout innings after he had given up 3+ innings in each out of his last 4 starts. And this is just the Dylan Cease experience that you get with him. Like with Dylan Cease, it always feels like there's, I would say, 2 rough patches a year where he gives up like 3+ runs for 5-6 straight games, and then he just goes on a dominant run. Like, that's just what Dylan Cease does. And I do feel like he's been able to hone it in. I feel like something, shall we say, lack of luck that he's been able to get towards the beginning part of the season, he's been able to sort that up. And you've got a San Diego Padres team that they themselves have a very rock solid bullpen. You've got all sorts of guys you're able to look at, like a Yuki Matsui, Audrey Marahon, Jason Adam. These guys have been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. Robert Suarez did poop the bed a few days ago. If you had the San Diego Padres on the money line on Saturday, that was a little bit less than tremendous, but still has been one of the more reliable closers out there in all of baseball. And for the Padres, this actually has not really been the fearsome lineup that a lot of people expected. Manny Machado is starting to pick it up with regards to power. He, Gavin Sheets, along with Fernando Tatis Jr., have all been able to give you a double-figure amount of homers this season. But, I mean, you take a look at Xander Bogaerts, and we're going to talk about another Boston Red Sox that was on the move in the flip side. But, I mean, he's been a guy that comes over from Boston. He has been not worth the money. That's the best way of being able to put it. That's the most polite way I could put it. Jake Cronenworth, move line, give you about a 360 on base, not necessarily for a lot of power. And with the LA Dodgers, you're still going to have Shohei Ohtani's bat out there in the lineup. Go back to when he last was a pitcher/hitter in 2023. marvelous season for the LA Angels. I don't think that there's any question that this will not affect him too much. Then you've got Teoscar Hernandez, give you a double-figure amount of homers. Andy Paz has done a nice job moving the line for the team as well. So I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the LA Dodgers. I'm actually looking at them on the run line personally, and do you think that this is a lower-scoring game? Semi-total at 8.1, so like that under, and I do like the LA Dodgers money line slash run line. Coming up next, we saw a big trade in Major League Baseball on Sunday with the Boston Red Sox moving Rafael Devers. What does that mean for them for Monday, though? We'll dive in next on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.